Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com. For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events, sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Hi, everybody. This is Kim from the Getting Chillier Everyday Midwest. Some of you probably saw, those of you who are friends with me on Facebook, probably saw the beautiful fall pictures I was taking. It was like God's color palette, phenomenal stuff last weekend. And then over the last couple of days, it got gray and rainy and really windy, and that moment is gone. But I tell you, one of the things that I learned to appreciate after my brain injury was to capture the moments like I do with my camera and treasure the moments, because you just never know if you're going to get an opportunity to see that moment again or relive the feeling in that moment again. So I'm really enjoying looking at last week's pictures and trying to stay in the day. That's one of my tools of recovery, because if I look out at winter coming, then I dwell in the negative, like my seasonal affective disorder and my war wounds that deal me a fit with pain all winter long. But today was a good day, and that's the only day I'm guaranteed. And so, in any case, the reason that I even brought that up is this is the 11th month and Thanksgiving is coming. And so on my shows this month, I'm going to be talking a little bit about gratitude in the second hour. So those of you that are listening out there, and also if you caught my post on Facebook last night, I had a really hard day yesterday, and I said that on any given day, I can always find things to be grateful for. Even though yesterday was really cold, windy, I had a headache, things didn't go as I planned, and I could have dwelled in the problem. But I found that in my life, I really need to make a conscientious effort to try to live in the solution and not the problem. I can certainly look at the problem, but where I want to be is in the solution. And I'll talk to you a little bit about that later. I'm going to do just a couple quick housekeeping items, and then I'm going to bring on my guest. And I'm very excited to talk to her tonight. First of all, I'd like to tell you that my sponsor, I want to thank my sponsor, Lash Publishing, and their website, and I'm going to type it into the chat room, is lapublishing.com. Again, that's lapublishing.com. And back in April, they released a new magazine, and it's really, really good. They've got some great writers, and They deal both with survivor and caregiver issues. And if you go to lapublishing.com and you look on the left side where things are listed, categories are listed, about a third of the way down, you'll see something that says Brain Injury Journey. And if you click on Brain Injury Journey, it'll take you to the magazine page. And the first thing you're going to see is that it's a seasonal magazine, and it'll show you the subscription price if you want the hard copy sent to you. But if you scroll down just a little bit, you'll see free online copy. And if you can give them your email, you'll be able to get the free online copy of this magazine, and it's really great. And so the fall version just came out, and the cover on that looks like a nice family, and the caption is Supporting Family Caregivers. So I encourage you to check that out. Subscribe at least to the free online version. You can't beat the price. You can also get the back issues, which would be, what, about four of them now. And I think you'll really enjoy it. I've had a lot of the people that are regular contributors to the magazine as guests on the show, some very talented people, both in how they express themselves, but also their insights, either being survivors or caregivers themselves or working in that field for a long time. So I encourage you to check it out. So we'll thank Lash Publishing. Also want to say that Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, same phone number, 424-243-9540. And after the live programs, they are immediately archived for on-demand listening. So, as I've told you several times, my brain injury was in 1995, and it took 17 years writing a book and becoming a radio host to meet my first survivors. And I never want anybody to have to go down that road again. I want them to be made aware that there's a choice. And then if they choose to go through it in isolation and being secretive and a lot of other adjectives I can use, that's certainly their choice. But I also want them to have a choice to not be alone, not think they're terminally unique, and be able to relate to others who've gone through similar circumstance, or at the very least have a genuine understanding and compassion. So again, pass the word on Brain Injury Radio. We're on at the same time every night, and there's just, gosh, Brain Injury Radio has been going on for 3 years and the 7 night a week for about a year and a couple of months now. So there are a lot of on-demand shows. So if you miss a live one and you're just feeling down, maybe feeling lonely in your condition or where you're at the moment, flip through some of the old shows, and I encourage you to listen to them, and you'll find out you're very far from alone in this day and age. So, my show is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics, and survivors share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. Tune in, stop in, and call in. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we'll have a featured guest like tonight, and others will introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussion. Again, I'm Kim Justice, your host. If you want to check out my website, it's inaflash.org. If you're on Facebook, I encourage you to check out my In a Flash page and like it. Also, Brain Injury Radio has a page that you can like. And we post our shows there. Two ways to access these shows. One is through the telephone, again, 424-243-9540, or through the links that you'll see posted in about 395 places around the internet. So welcome again, everybody, and without further ado, well, I guess I will say the format of my show, because one of the beauties of Brain Injury Radio is we were given the latitude as hosts to create whatever program we saw fit as far as the format. And the format I use is to do my interview first, and then at the end of the interview, give you an opportunity to call in with any comments or questions that you have. One of the reasons I do that is quality control in the sound area, but the second one, those of you that know me out there, is the something shiny issue. And that's the thing that I can be very focused and on track, and then something catches my peripheral ear or eye and you lose me. So I just try to stay on point and do the interview, and then we have a little time for Q&A, and in the second half of the show we have open mics and music. So I encourage you to stick around and check us out. Tonight my guest is Dr. Lisa DeLong. She holds an undergraduate degrees, actually, in special education, deaf education, and music therapy. For Les Paul out there, our Tuesday host, who is big into music therapy, I knew you'd get here early tonight. And Lisa also holds a PhD in neuropsychology with a subspecialty in neurocognitive processing. She is a certified EMG biofeedback technician, a certified EEG neurofeedback technician, and a certified practitioner of cognitive rehabilitation therapy. Dr. DeLong was the founder of a private not-for-profit fine arts elementary middle school working with brain injuries using music, dance, drama, language, and the visual arts. She has developed a process called neurocognitive therapy and has implemented this for the past 18 years in her private practice, both in Indiana and California. I'm going to type her website into the chat room, but for those of you who are just listening and not in chat, it's www.cognitive-connections.com. I'm going to run that by you one more time before I bring her on, www.cognitive-connections.com, and we will be bringing that up again later. So, without further ado, I am going to bring on Dr. Lisa. Are you here with us?
I am. Thank you, Kim, so much for inviting me. And what a great introduction.
Well, thanks. I'm so glad you could be here. You know, there's a couple of people out there in the audience tonight that when I first opened my Facebook account, I don't know, a million years ago, I went there seldom. And then when my book came out, I realized, you know, as a marketing tool, you've got to do that. So I kind of started being a rounder on Facebook and getting more and more involved. And I still, you know, every time I figure something out, they change settings or whatever they sound, you know, whatever they change every 10 minutes and kind of throws me for a loop. And they kept telling me, some of the other hosts and guests, you have just got to go to LinkedIn. You've got to go to LinkedIn. And I'm like, oh, God, please. I got 3 emails.
Another
I got,
new one.
Yeah, 25 pages of Facebook. I mean, give me a break over here. But I did go and get the, I listened to my fellow hosts, and I did start a LinkedIn page, and it wasn't that long ago. I still don't know how to work it, but I worked it well enough, and I believe in divine intervention to find you. And one of the things that, again, we're all, the hosts, are very lucky about is that because of the exorbitant amount we're paid, this is a joke for those of you that don't know, all of the hosts are survivors who volunteer to do this, but we have the latitude to be able to pick out people who are of interest to us, and it really is flattering in your case, Lisa, because I was looking at a page, and I still don't know how you command those pages, so every now and again they just pop up. I don't even know what makes them pop up. But when it popped up, I saw you and I read about you and what you were doing, and it just really piqued my interest. And you're involved in so many things that I thought you'd be a wonderful guest to have on. And I really appreciate the fact that you were willing to bear with me. We did a little phone tag for a while, but I'm so pleased we could finally catch up and talk about your story and your services, the things that you do that make you tick. I think the audience will really benefit by the message that you have to carry. So,
thank you.
I think what I'd like to do, Les Paul is our Tuesday night host, I want you to know, and he and I are, the others are into music therapy, but Les and I in particular, we're funny. We are like Lucy and Desi or something. We finish each other's sentences. He'll say a sentence for a song, and I'll say the artist, or vice versa. I'll say a sentence from a song, and he'll say the artist, and we're just doing that all the time. And so, and he's the karaoke king, which I can't claim. Take any claim on that one myself. You don't even want to hear me. But in any case, this is a great topic. You know, the visual arts, and when I was going through my recovery in isolation, the visual arts and the music arts is really where I found my recovery ultimately.
Right.
I started out by taking photographs because everything in life seemed ugly at that moment. I couldn't find the beauty in life, and I felt guilty and shameful because I knew I should have gratitude because my life was spared, and I had another whack at creating a life worth living and being of service to others. But at the same time, you know, my modus operandi changed quite a bit, and change is a hard thing for even, you know, quote-unquote regular people, you know.
Right. Yeah, no, that flexibility in the brain is hard to come by sometimes.
Yeah. Well, let's start at the beginning with you. Before we get into your business, which is very interesting, one of the things that took you down the path to what you're working on now and have been for quite some time was a personal experience of your own that you weren't even aware of until a while later. Why don't you tell us the beginning of your story?
Okay. I'm happy to do so. Thanks, Kim. It really started when I was an infant, and I'd been out on a picnic table, and I guess I had fallen off and onto a rock, and, you know, none of us thought anything of it, and we're assuming that that's where at least some of this has come from. But as I went through school, I found that school was not always very easy. I was a very bright child, but it seemed to be a very difficult task for me. And actually, to the extreme, I was in most of the special ed classes or in classes that were for remediation. And at some point in time, it just got to the point where it was kind of understood that I probably would not be able to go to college or really do any of the kind of things that most kids, you know, or parents at least, dream their kids will do. And so I kind of fought it and decided to go ahead and try it anyway. And the first time out, it was with IU School of Music. and it was a really difficult way to start college.
Yeah.
And so I flunked it. It was horrible. There were so many things to memorize and so much to do that I just could not do it. But I didn't give up, and I decided to go on and ended up going over to Ball State University where they had a degree in deaf education.
Oh.
And so specializing in special education and deaf education, I was able to learn sign language. And as soon as I started learning the visual aspect to language, all of a sudden things started making sense for me. And so little by little, you know, I'd been raised in a family of artists and musicians, and so I knew that at home I always seemed to learn and learn really well, and there was never an issue or problem with it. But actually getting out and doing the school books and really going through the routine, which I'm sure so many of your listeners can relate to, you know, just trying to memorize information and being able to retain it and have a speedy brain to be able to recall that information when you need to, is just not there. It was just very difficult. And so I learned more while I was going through the deaf education and realized that my brain had a severe auditory processing problem. And what we gather now is it probably was the fall, which, you know, when you think about all these little people, these little children, they're constantly falling. And so all these learning disabilities are many, many, many times related to head injuries that are just never diagnosed or found.
Right.
And so that's kind of how it started.
Yeah, and I was very interested in you validating that. One of the cool things about the guest, well, I'm just going to back up and say when we talked about that earlier, it was more validation and we're hearing more and more about it. And I told you that when I got here, I came as a result of my ruptured brain aneurysm in 1995. And I thought that was it. And as I've listened to the show in the last over a year, I've heard these stories similar to yours, and I kind of panned back through my own life and remembered what I recited to you, and I'll just make it brief here, but a bicycle accident where I flew over the handlebars, landed on my forehead, and got a big goose egg, and back in the day, like that in the early 60s, they put a bag of ice on your head and shined a flashlight in your eyes and didn't let you go to sleep. And the next day you were better, and that was the end of it. And then at 17, between high school and college, a horseback riding accident where when I came off the horse, I landed and snapped my femur, but I also bounced and rolled down a pretty substantial bluff where, you know, there were branches and rocks and all kinds of other things. And at that time, they were focusing on the snapped femur, which was very bad. And I don't even know if they knew to look for head injuries back then. And then a number of years later, in my earlier 20s, I was in an unfortunate domestic violence situation. Not domestic, we weren't living together, but an abusive relationship is what I'm trying to say, and had a pretty bad blow to the head during that. And so it's just been through listening to the programming on Brain Injury Radio that the numbers, you know, it starts adding up and really makes you think, because each of these things seem like isolated incidences. And like you said, you know, you got up and apparently functioned normally in other ways, and by the time school came along, since that happened when you were a baby, nobody probably thought to think about the picnic table at that point and connect the dots. And that's what I really love about what you're doing and what I've been hearing from people on Brain Injury Radio, both the hosts and the survivors, about the cumulative effects of blows to the head that we take. So you noticed yours when it came to school. yet you went on to get so many academic pedigrees. Explain to me how that worked. Lisa? I think Lisa dropped off the board, you guys. That's good. You can't wait to hear more, but I think she dropped off the board. Let's see if we can get her back. Sorry, folks. I'll even try to dial. I hope her cell phone didn't run out of ink, but let me find her number here in my phone while we see if she dials back in. And what I might do, no, I won't do that. I was going to say maybe I'll put on a song and have her come back, but I think I've got her number right here. So let's try. We try to do this sometimes. Ringing out to somebody from the studio, which I'm going to do here, and see if it works. Oh, there she is. I don't even have to do that. No experiment tonight. Thank God. Lisa,
hello.
Are you back?
Yes, I'm so sorry. I lost you there.
I know, and I was going to try a new trick in the studio. They put a thing in here so we can dial out, and so I'm flipping through my phone trying to find your my recent calls.
I am
calls,
so sorry. Sorry about that.
You're fine. You're fine. Everybody was caught up, but it was hilarious because in the chat room, somebody had just typed, thanks for booking her. I can't wait to hear more. And then I directed a question to you and you were gone.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear more as soon as we can find her again. So welcome back. And the end of what I had to say, and then I was just lobbing it over to you, is that we're getting more and more evidence that repeated blows to the head cause problems, and we're not always aware of what they are. They're not always diagnosed, and we can't connect the dots. So what the last thing I said was, people like you are helping us connect the dots.
Kim, I think that one of the biggest things that happened in this field, and rightfully so, we've got a lot of incredible professionals out there doing just really spectacular work. But we have three main fields. We have our medical field, our mental health field, and our educational field. And when you have the medical field, they're primarily, they need to triage people. You know, are they bleeding? Do they need surgery? Do we need to put them on medication? You know, they're looking at any kind of physiological response that they, and then you have the mental health field, and they're going to talk you through it. They've got a few tools in their toolbox that they're going to try to use. And then you've got the educational field, and the educational field, of course, doesn't really, they're not really trained to go above and beyond what they know in school. And so we're really looking at this very strong need for a new field, a new area, which is why I created this neurocognitive processing. It's one that really is a liaison between the physicians, the mental health field, and the educational field. Because with, as you know, and everyone who's listening understands, at least I assume, with head injuries, the results can be very subtle. And we never know exactly how that will play out in someone's world and life. And for some people, it's extremely significant. For others, you know, it just doesn't really show up very much. And so you need to have someone who can look at these subtleties and look at the tiniest little bitty components to learning and try to find within the brain how you can retrain those little bitty subtleties.
And is that what they call neuroplasticity these days?
The idea that you can retrain is called neuroplasticity. It is the fact that if we do something in repetition, if we do something consistently and constantly, then there's going to be some new learning that can occur. Even within damaged areas, it will bypass it and use some of the clean areas that hasn't been used or what can't be used again. And so what we're doing with the neuroplasticity is really retraining, remediating, re-strategizing, learning in a different mode or in a different way.
Great. And you talked about, though, unless I misunderstood, you're very much for the neuroplasticity, but you said that it has some, I thought that you intimated that it has some limits to it that you've observed.
Well, I think that what ends up happening is that a lot of times people will do some very isolated, almost generic games or activities, thinking that this will help that person. And I think that's probably where we were kind of talking before with. And that these generic games that are just kind of out there, although very good, they aren't always mm-hmm. the ones that are going to be, that are going to hit that little sweet spot of concern. And it really takes someone who's able to really look at individual problems and try to find that very, very, very small spot. And if it's not, if that is a damaged area, then there's got to be some consistency and repetition in a different mode or modality. And this is one of the reasons why the music works so well and or the art works so well or dance. You're learning all sorts of language. You're learning all sorts you're learning your information, but in a way that uses a different area of the brain. And this mm-hmm. is one of the reasons also why we use the EEG neurofeedback with everyone we work with, because it actually calms the person. It allows the person to have a little bit of almost a homeostasis or balance within their brain so that they're able to learn new information. Because, you know, that's the other big part, is that a brain that has been damaged in any way, even if it is a brain that was born damaged with fetal alcohol syndrome or with autism or, you know, a variety of different conditions, these brains are always under constant stress, always. And so mm-hmm. for us to do the best job that we can, whether it's the medical field, the mental health field, or the educational field, or just neurocognitive therapy field, we all need to have a platform to work from that is nice and calm and relaxed and able to perform at their very, very, very best. We personally use one called Zingard's system. It's neuro-optimal. And so it's a very, very, very safe home system, and or you can come into the office, and it makes all the difference in the world with the people that I'm working with.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier that, and you were alluding to now, that made great sense to me is that there really is no one magic bullet. And when you take all the categories, you did the academic, the mental, the traditional healthcare, that what you do, and also those things that we see out there that we join, I won't name companies, but there's companies out there that give you exercises on the computer. If you think you've got bad short-term memory, then they'll give you memory games and that sort of thing. But to have somebody actually direct you to the exercises that are going to be most helpful to you after you've had an evaluation, what you guys do is you really customize after evaluating your patients, clients, people that you see, exactly to the best of your ability, what right. are going to be the best tools for that person to use. So you're not handing out the same candy bar to everybody who walks in the door or telling them to go join a certain website program that's going to help, but you're actually studying the individual and having, you know, going back and forth with the individual so that you can really get a handle on prioritizing their needs and then being, I would call it kind of a coach, you know, not only a practitioner, very valid practitioner, but in your own way, when you were describing it, it was kind of like a coach. You're somewhere to help somebody and say, yeah, there's a zillion different things out there to try, but based on my couple decades of practice and experience, mm-hmm. and after us talking and doing the evaluation, I think you might want to prioritize and integrate some of the treatments you've been using and are looking at using, and I'll help you put that package together in hopes of making the most effective treatment plan for you. And I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, it really has made a huge difference to, like I said, the families and or the individuals that we work with. And many of it, many times I might offer some computerized games and activities or iPad games and activities, but they are very close to what it is that that person's concerns are. And, you know, we just continue to keep getting closer and closer and closer until we can hit all of those elements that that person needs. And, you know, it, like I said before, it always starts with the neurofeedback, because for me, I need to get people sleeping well. I need to make sure that their bodies are functioning to the best of their ability. And many, many, many people with head injuries, you know, we have sleep issues. That's just kind of a concern that goes along with the head injury. So we need to remediate that first, and then once we get that down, then we do some tests and kind of get an idea. And some of those are in checklist format. Some of them are actually standardized test measurements that we use. And then we help come up with a program that works. And we try to do it within the guidelines of that individual as well. You know, I might have somebody who says, you know, yes, I sleep with my husband who comes in from work at 2 in the morning every morning, so he wakes me up every morning. And so we have to kind of play with that and come up with some solutions around those kinds of issues. So they aren't just canned, ideas or programs. So.
Right. Okay, when you started then, tell me a little bit, I'm going to back up before that question and just say, so you became aware in school that you were having to focus a little bit harder, or things were coming to you a little harder than you thought they should be. And was that when you got a diagnosis, or were they even there yet?
No, they didn't. Yeah, there was no diagnosis until I was totally finished with school and out of school. I was considered learning disabled and, and was in many of the remedial courses, was in some of the regular school courses. Was always just told I was working under potential, low grades in most of my classes. But I had kind of this speed processing problem that goes along with auditory processing, where I hear something and then it takes a couple of seconds for me to really understand it, be able to kind of acclimate to it and associate it with the information I already know, and then to try to be able to come out and have a response or an answer. The whole class had already gone on by then, and the conversation had gone on, so I'd missed a whole bunch of it all of a sudden as well. And so it just took a little bit for me to learn to add visuals with it. And even now, most of the time when I do even this kind of an interview, I typically will do it on Skype or on something where I can read lips and I get a visual cue at the same time. And so, some of the strategies that I help others with are strategies that I've just had to live with.
Right. Well, yeah, sometimes, through the trial and error we have ourselves and we find out, especially, in your case, you also were undiagnosed. Nobody connected the dots and any possibilities for some problems I had in my life, behavioral problems, we'll say. They were just kind of things that people recognized about us, but nobody tried to test or connect where that might have come from. It was just kind of a label. So I can see why you know, your first undertaking was to do your undergraduate in special education and deaf education. When we're on that topic, you told me something interesting about the auditory. Now you got me doing it. the auditory deficit. Now tell people exactly what that meant. My first inclination was to think it was a hearing problem, but not in a way. You explained to me that it wasn't in a typical way. You know, that you would think of auditory relating to hearing and it being a hearing problem. You brought some depth to the definition, and tell us, repeat to the audience what you told me earlier about that.
Well, I can tell you first that the majority of head injuries also have auditory processing problem associated with it. It happens all the time. It's usually a temporal lobe problem, and what actually happens is the brain cannot perceive the information that's coming into it in the same fashion that other people's brains do. And so it is not a hearing loss. The mechanisms within the auditory system is fine. It's much more the actual way the brain processes the auditory signal that comes in. And that can play out in several different ways. It can play out in sequential memory, which is just not able to hold enough auditory information in their heads at one time. It can play out as a reception problem, where when I'm talking and information, when a speaker is speaking and information is coming at the person too quickly, they cannot assimilate all that information fast enough to really understand it and recall it. Or it can come out as an auditory association problem, meaning that once you have gained that information in your brain, where you're storing it is not, you're not able to retrieve it. You've stored it because of, you know, what location you're at. You know, if I ask somebody what they ate for dinner last night, many times people have to say, well, where was I? You know, this would be associated with an auditory association problem, you know, just filing that information in a different spot and then having to go back and get it. Or it can be an auditory discrimination problem where your brain really cannot perceive the tiniest phonemes within a word. So the P's sound like D's, or, you know, M's sound like N's, and so you misinterpret the word.
Right. That's really interesting, because all except the last one you said, I have all of those issues. No one's ever asked. Nobody's ever explained it that way. But I've got little terms for some of those. Like one of them you said, I call full basket syndrome. It's when too much is coming to me too fast and I can't retain it. Now, I didn't know there was something real like that. And when you're out there alone and you don't have any idea, and the other one, I don't think I've made up a name like full basket syndrome, but the one where, you know, you can sit down and read a book or watch a movie and you're very aware while it's going on, the comprehension is there, you get it. But then the next day you say, I saw, if you can even think of the title, you know, of what you were reading or what you were watching, and someone will say, oh, what was that about? And with me, what I get are general impressions, like that I either liked it or I didn't like it. But if you ask me to recall detail of what it was about, I normally can't.
Well, and do you get feelings? It was a happy feeling movie, or it really made me frustrated, or you know, and so that also could be an association thing, where you have listened to this program and you've associated in a different way with it, and so that more of that information was really embedded in a memory system that was closer to your limbic system or your cingulate system or so forth, so that you're really not. Those embedded memories are not where most auditory information needs to be embedded within the brain for you to be able to retrieve it.
Wow. Now, isn't that a trip? It took 18 years after the big blow to ever even hear that terminology before today and know that it's spot on like 3 out of 4 things that you just said. I mean, it seems almost impossible that more people, and I know there's a place for all the categories that you talked about, but one of the things I hear a lot on the show is people feeling like the traditional medical field has failed them in one context. They succeeded because they saved their life, and that's huge, and no one wants to minimize that. But afterward, when they're sent out into the universe and these things like what you just outlined, as well as some other issues surface, if there's not a support group or a doctor who's studied more than the half a chapter they devote to brain injury, at least up till a couple of years ago in their curriculum, then we're left out there without a handbook when we leave the hospital, as well as our loved ones, and don't have a clue of what's going on. And if you don't have people to relate to and talk about it, then you start feeling less than or damaged or ashamed that you weren't able to function at the level that you became accustomed to. And that's where the old me, new me comes in. But one of the more painful places, I think, is the tweener, because you knew who the old you was. And there comes a point where you come to the acceptance. For a long time, there's denial, and you're just fighting to get back there, you know. Mm-hmm. And then when the realization finally comes, you're not going back there.
Right.
But you don't know where the new me is. Where do you go from here? And a lot of us have experienced going to the wrong places, absolutely, or taking the wrong medications, absolutely, and have just kind of done a lot of trial and error on our own, which is another reason why I really like these programs, because people like you can come on and offer us options and explanations that whether we're a week out, a year out, 10 years out, 20 years out, 30 years out, we have never heard what you just said before. But yet we can, I'm watching the chat room with relatability from everybody in the chat room is relating and picking up on one of these things in an experiential way, not just an intellectual understanding way. They've lived this way for however many years they've had their injury, and nobody pointed it out.
It's extremely subtle, but boy, is it significant in our world, just very much so. You know, somebody who wears glasses, it's so easy to see that they need glasses to be able to see. You'd never ask someone with glasses to take your glasses off. But people that have an internal brain issue of any kind is so unseen that people are very unforgiving for it. They really believe that every decision you're making is to get in their way or some, you know, to affect these other people in some way. And with auditory issues particularly, and again, I would venture to say at least 85 to 90% of the head injuries are going to have some auditory component to it now. And when you look at, you know, the numbers of people, and still nobody really understands it or knows about it or will, you know, come up with accommodations for people, even in schools or at work or anything. And it's just really always surprising to me. They, you know, even parents don't mind saying to their children, will you just listen to me, you know, as though they have control over it.
Right.
It's really an interesting thing.
Yeah, that is another component of it, too, that is very valid, and that's the understanding. Not only do we as survivors not understand it, but the family doesn't understand it. And one of the reasons they call this the silent epidemic is because, like you said, if someone's wearing glasses, that's obvious. If someone has a problem with the way they walk or the way they talk as the result of the brain injury, then that's something tangible that outsiders
exactly.
or family members can see. But so many of us get, you know, pegged as either faking it or imagining it, or it's mental,
mm-hmm.
you know, not physical in its spaces. And I think that's where some of us get a little frustrated if at first we've only gone down the traditional medical path, because we describe these things like you just talked about, and we
mm-hmm.
get the pill du jour pelted our way. And, you know, there was a time where I could walk into a room and look at people and go, Lexapro, Celexa, Lexapro, Celexa.
Oh.
And now I can walk
yep.
into a room and say, Pristique, Cymbalta, Pristique, Cymbalta. And,
yes.
You know, and in that one-size-fits-all thing, you know, those drugs that are being marketed at the time, the ones you're seeing on TV, just about everyone you have an opportunity to ask is one of those. And from a very simplistic, logical sense, I kind of sit there and shake my head and go, wow, it's amazing that the current thing on a TV commercial is the implied magic bullet, brand new saving grace for all of the toils and tribulations you've been dealing with for all these years. Yet then you hear all the disclaimers at the end that,
of course,
you
it
know,
can kill you.
Yeah, that'll, yeah, you'll feel great, but you'll be dead,
yeah.
you know, you know,
yeah.
no more pain because you'll be gone. But, you know, so that's one of the frustrations that we've run into. And again, not putting down every course of action has its benefits and its deficits. Obviously, we
of
never
course.
Want to downplay traditional medicine and the fact that
oh,
they
no.
saved our lives, that they do have the ability to help in a lot of categories, but where they fall short isn't always in the shrink's office right away. I told you earlier, I joke on the show sometimes and say that, you know, as we talk to our doctors about certain things and they don't have an answer to them, or we've stopped taking pills for it, then we wind up affectionately, I say, at the shrink boneyard. And I used to defy that. And then I came to an acceptance that really, after the horror we've been through and then the wrong treatments, you know, that we've been through, we are a little half-cracked by the time we get, you know.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be human.
Well, there's no doubt every single one of those fields are fabulous. They're very important. And, you know, at different times during our lives, they are even more important. I just think that we're missing a fourth field. And I think that that's kind of where I was going with it, is we now know medically we're okay. We now know, you know, mental health-wise, we've done all that we can do that way. We've, you know, we've tried straight-up educational routes, and now we need to figure out even more subtly than that, where do we go from here? And I think that's where this field has really, you know, made a huge difference in people's lives.
So after, and I'm going to come back to the music therapy, I'm going to taunt Les Paul and make him wait for that for a minute, but so after, I'm just a brat that way sometimes, so the special education, the deaf education, but the next thing, you go on to hold a PhD in neuropsychology with a subspecialty in neurocognitive processing. If you will, I'd like you to explain for those who might be new around here what that means. That's a lot of big words, and how would you break that down for the people that don't know and that are newcomers around here?
You know, Kim, I still don't know exactly what it meant, and I have a degree in it. No, actually,
The neuropsychology, I think a lot of people do understand. It is a way of learning how to do all of these standardized testing that are out there, and there's a lot of different standardized measurements. And really just kind of understanding that to be able to kind of find locations within the brain that are good for very specific issues, you use different tests. And so really the majority of that degree was pretty much geared towards, you know, how do we test someone to find out exactly what they know and what they don't know and what they might need and, you know, how to go about helping them get those needs. Neurocognitive processing is really how does the brain learn? How is it that we do what we do to the best of our ability? And to be real honest, you know, the degree's 10 years old and life's changed a lot. It continues to change. We are learning so much about the brain. What I tell you today will be different tomorrow. I mean, it's just changing so much. But that is the most exciting part about my field, and what I do is that I get to constantly be learning new information, which really keeps my brain as sharp as it can be as well.
Yeah, so, I would imagine. Do you have trouble with all the new stuff? Yeah, well, I mean, I just wondered because that was the kind of thing that chased me out of my industry is, well, and it was a little different. Wasn't new information. Well, it was new information, but compliance, you know, in the financial services field, all of a sudden compliance, they were cutting down forests like crazy, printing up, you know, legalese compliance issues in financial services. And I grew up with it around the dinner table. I had been doing it for a couple of decades. And all of a sudden, every 10 minutes, some new compliance issue was coming out. My eyes were rolling around in my head. I was breaking out into a sweat. And I was like, I just can't keep up. I just can't. What happened? I was always three steps ahead of the game. And now I just can't catch up, but I don't want to tell anybody. Didn't want to admit it. We were talking about concessions the other night, and I said, you know, that's great if you're going to be straight up and honest. And we distinguished between the government and social services field and the business community that I was raised in. And, you know, how some are a little more willing than others to do those kind of things. And particularly when the economy is being pinched and you applied for a certain job in a corporation, you got it, you've been doing it a couple years, they suddenly decide to lay off a whole department, and now you've got two or three job descriptions, none of which you signed up for. You're not getting paid anymore for it. But your brain gets a lot more strain, even with people who have never had a brain injury, trying to keep up with all that new information coming and the increased workload. And that really sets a person with some challenges up to fail. And I think that brings a lot of fear, you know, a lot of fear of going out and trying things because, you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, you know, in some places as far as being honest, and then your own internal fear. You know, I talked to you earlier about the fact that we're going to be opening our own studio and broadcasting from it instead of the way we've been doing it, and that we hosts are going to be all learning new technique with equipment, and that it's been a source of some fear, apprehension, anxiety, you know, for me, I'll just speak for me, but, you know, the other hosts also have brain injuries and nobody's doing handsprings right now, you know, really excited to learn this new thing. We'd like to not have some of the technical difficulties that have been in the old thing that is making us move to the new thing, but then we got to learn the new thing. And, you know, that can be a challenging space to be in, to talk yourself down off the cliff and take a deep breath and just move forward. So the neuropsychology then was basically the the testing, and I went through that, and you got to have something, but I guess what I got out of some of the tests that they gave me was that the tests are so subjective in a lot of ways. There's some valid information that comes out, but depending on how they catch you emotionally and tired-wise, I think you brought up a great point. You're so right about the sleep issues with people that, you know, the answers I'm sure would be in the similar ballpark, no matter what condition you were in physically or mentally or spiritually. But I do think that those subjective factors fed into those tests can maybe give a wrong or a not totally accurate picture of what's going on. And I'll give you an example. One of the tests I was given, they had pictures, like six different pictures, and they flipped the picture up to me and said, okay, what's this? And they did it with the six pictures, and she goes back and says, what was in the first picture? Well, I knew it was a family at a dinner table eating, okay? What I didn't know is if it was, I deduced it was mom and dad, fudging a little bit there, you know, because you try to do that. Oh, yeah, I don't want to say I don't remember all this. So I tried really hard, but I couldn't tell you if it was mom, dad, and two little boys, two little girls, one of each, what they were eating, if there were pictures on the wall, what color the wall was. Any kind of detail. And I thought about it later, and I was thinking, I'm in the financial services industry where I'm investing people's money. Details are important. You know, I can't say that this is, okay, this is an investment fund, you know.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, now we've got to go in and have a lot of detail that's going to make a pretty big difference between, you know, your client's financial situation and your financial and legal situation, you know, and that's kind of what chased me out. But I do see the need to get into a ballpark or a baseline on the neurological testing.
Right.
But then you go on with neurocognitive processing. So
the neurocognitive processing is going to give us a little bit more of the academic cognitive areas. So the fact that you were not able to remember in that picture tells me that there was probably some visual sequential memory and or short term. So I would then go in and do some other visual tests that I might have, do some sensory integration tests, do some auditory tests to make sure that it's not an auditory memory. You know, and so for me, the testing that I use is not to diagnose anybody. We all know why we're there. But it's to find the little details that are missing, the tiny little things that are happening as you're trying to and struggling to take this test. You know, what is it that is really catching you up? Because every single brain is different, and every single person, they can have the exact same fall in the exact same place, and they will respond differently. And so finding that exact spot and trying to help remediate those concerns are really, for me, why I do the testing. And so I did not even want to become a licensed neuropsychologist because I needed the information from it. I didn't want to spend another 3 years going through all of the, you know, the oversight hours and everything else. I knew
right.
I wasn't going to be a neuropsychologist. I knew I was creating this other field that really borders on education. It really is very similar to that. It's finding those very, you know, smallest levels of what someone can do, how they can do it, what they're really, really good at, which is why we have the music therapy, which is why we have the, you know, the art therapists that come in, the dancers that come in, all of these, you know, aesthetics to life are what we enjoy, we like. And when you can smile and have fun while you're learning, you know, which is why I try to do games all the time. I try to make everything I do with somebody as fun as we possibly can. because I know you're not only more apt to do them, but I also know that the brain and the body senses pleasure. And when it hits that pleasure zone, then you're more apt to learn from it.
Yeah. Okay, so you said you knew that what you were going to do was a blend of treatments and not being a straight neuropsychologist. Was that from the time that you were back doing your undergraduate work, or had you decided that as you were going through becoming a licensed neuropsychologist, that you knew there was something more, that was valid, but you had
There's an interesting way, a little journey there, because I started out with all of the undergraduate stuff and absolutely loved it, enjoyed it, and then decided to start a school. We ended up adopting a child that had fetal alcohol syndrome and found that we had a very difficult time finding a place that was just absolutely, you know, spectacular for her. And so we created a school, and it was a fine arts school. And so we used all of the different things that I had learned in college myself and the way I was personally raised. So we had music, dance, drama and puppetry, language, literature, and the visual arts. And it was an elementary school, middle school. It actually even went all the way down to preschool. And so not only did our children go through this program, but 150 other people at a time went through this program as well. I mean, there were really literally hundreds of kids that went through it. But it was a fabulous program. And so what we did, though, was we found that for some reason, these children that were coming in labeled, you know, problem kids, they were labeled learning disabled, they were, you know, some of them were brilliant. I mean, they were true scholars, but they were bored to death in schools, their parents said, and so they were getting in trouble. But all of this group of children that were just, you know, awesome little guys, came in, and we did this type of programming with them. We did not have books. We truly, I mean, other than some of the best literature type stuff, but beyond that, they didn't learn in a classic school book. We taught them math, science, reading, everything in English, everything they needed to know, but through the arts. And so when that was really in play, it was in the middle of that whole 12 years of having this started that I started thinking to myself, what in the world is going on? Why are these children who, you know, really literally would get me D's and F's in every other program, why are they succeeding now? And so that's when I went back for my PhD. And I went to a very unique university. It was called, is called the Union Institute in Cincinnati, and they allow you to build your own program. And so I had NASA scientists, I had people from all over the United States on my doctoral committee helping me create this program. And so the neuropsychology was definitely a path I needed and had to go down, but it was not my intent ever when I went through it to become a neuropsychologist and sit in an office and test all day. You know, I absolutely created one of the funnest, most incredible programs ever. It's just, I love it to pieces. I love going to work every day. It's just so much fun.
Well, I love that to pieces too. When you were talking, the thought that came to my mind is, why aren't all schools that way? Because I feel like certainly not good that the kids needed to come to your school in the context that they did, you know, because it was in back of a problem with not being able to process traditional learning, but that what a way to be able to process traditional learning is what I thought.
Right.
It was like, seriously? And
and
what proves
it. We ended up having a child ourselves that was just, you know, a very bright boy. And even for him, it was, you know, he started out a little bit shy. And when he had to get up on stage and do all this stuff, he's become a very articulate man now, just an, you know, incredible soul in his own right.
And I think, you know, it really did have a huge, and what's more, most everyone that left that program, almost all of them ended up going into gifted programs or gifted classes and, you know, higher level, you know, higher level degrees. So it certainly expanded the way they think and what they, how they're able to process information in a way that our traditional schools are not doing at this point. But it was because of that that I was able to then take that information and say, okay, if this worked with children, and children with special needs in some cases, in other cases, it was almost peak performance. I mean, it was something mm-hmm. that just really kind of helped them think sharper, faster, quicker. You know, then what is it about that? And that's when I really, really got fascinated with the whole neuroscience and neuropsychology and the neurocognitive processing field. And just took off in that way.
Well, that's amazing. I think the proof in the pudding is another thing I've heard a lot being a host around here for a year is that a lot, including myself, that a lot of us found cathartic healing in the arts. And some people, you know, were in the arts a little bit before, but there's a ton of us who were not in the arts before. In fact, we were eons away from that. We could appreciate fine art, but we didn't consider ourselves to be artists at all. And it's funny, I tell another story on myself that in second grade, I was always rode really hard from a young age to get good grades. And I tried really hard, and in art, I stunk. I couldn't draw a straight line with the ruler. And some teacher said to me, however old you are in second grade, she patted me on the shoulder and said, well, honey, not everybody can be an artist. You know, you focus on something else. And it became a family joke for the next however many years it took to get me to 50, age 50. I just believed I wasn't, you know, well, I'm just not an artist. And when I started doing the photography and wound up getting my own exhibit, private exhibit at our botanical garden attraction in my city, and then had some of my cards in stores, and then wound up writing a book, and now I'm doing radio, and I've always danced. I grew up in the, my mom was a baton and dance teacher, so from a child I did it, and then I grew right into my coming of age in the disco era, and spandex and stiletto heels were my friends, you know, back then for that time. And so I've just always thought that, you know, that's really amazing. I'm sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought. I was back with
okay.
the glittering ball.
That's all right. Can you imagine what would have happened, Kim, if you would have been told when you were 6 years old that, oh, my gosh, I think you're going to be an artist? Think of...
Yeah, I just never considered doing it because
yeah.
they were an authority figure because I was a child, for
of
one,
course.
But...
Yeah, and
I
that's
just,
what we hear all the time, though. Yeah.
Yeah, and the
we
healing.
We take people's judgments, and we really, really believe them.
Yeah, I think we internalize some really toxic stuff, but what's cool, I think, and you just, again, you're affirming some things that I've heard, and each time I hear them, they empower me, and that's that a lot of people are finding their modicums of healing or growth from where they've maybe been stuck in their recovery at whatever level that was, and acting it out through the arts. They've started blogging, they're writing poetry or short stories, they're writing books,
yeah.
They've taken up oil painting, music therapy, they're playing an instrument, they're listening to music, they're doing karaoke. It all has to do with coming back to the arts, because apparently, well, I should have felt threatened in that area, but I guess it's because I didn't view it as art until the botanical garden validated it for me, you know, and then it started to be a little bit of a confidence builder. Each thing, though, was a leap of faith, because I didn't have the belief that I was an artist. So when it came to writing a book or having the exhibit or whatever it was, you know, I was almost waiting for the other shoe to drop, not believing that I was in the position I was in and that I'm actually healing through it and not just feeling worse about myself because of it. I don't know. I think that's a real gift.
And I think we all have experienced that feeling. You know, I know I did once through the PhD. I kept thinking, oh my gosh, there's absolutely no way I'm going to make this. There's just no way. You know, I've been told all along I couldn't. And not from my family, by the way. They were always very supportive. But, you know, when somebody does something in a different way, it is assumed that you won't be able to do it. You can't perform. And I've always kind of read a long time ago and always believed that your emotions really drive your ability to pay attention. And when you pay attention, you can learn. And so I think that's why the arts has always been something that has been, you know, accessible to a brain, is it drives your emotions and your passions and therefore your attention so that you can learn.
Well, and they also help you find, like you said, your attention, they help you find them. When I started the photography, it was at a time where I had lost the ability to see the beauty. You know, I was in a depressed state and nothing, you know, the beauty wasn't apparent to me looking around. And I started taking pictures, and when I would upload the pictures, I would see beauty. And it was beauty I had seen, but I hadn't claimed it through the lens. I claimed it when I saw it, you know, after it was uploaded, and it was an active memory of having been there and done it, and it was beautiful. And that was how I rediscovered beauty in life, was through the lens of a camera. So I'm just so, and Les Paul, I'm going to let him tell his own story. I've gigged him enough tonight, so when it comes to the Q&A part, I'm not going to bring up the secret I know about his healing and what it had to do with music. I'll just say that mine started with photography, and then it evolved into writing, and then it evolved into talking, which I'm just being jokingly sexist. Being a woman, I had a foot up on, being a talker, but to bring it into a healing environment, you know, has been such a gift to be able to do, and such an incredible evolution over the period of 3 years that was completely lacking for the 18 years prior to that.
Wow.
I mean, that's like blow me away stuff. But so I want to go on in the note for just a minute, and then we'll come back. Let me do a little time check here. I'm so fascinated. Oh my God, we've been talking. All right, I'm going to have to let the troops on. Anybody who has a question or a comment for Lisa, the number is 424-243-9540. Again, that's 424-243-9540. And don't forget to hit 1 if you have a question. And if you have your hand up and you really didn't have a question, you can hit 1 again, and that'll take it down. And we are going to get to the questions in just a couple more questions. I've kept her longer than I promised, but this is just fascinating stuff. So in the resume, what we've gotten to the point now, certified EMG biofeedback technician, certified EEG neurofeedback technician. Can you tell us a little bit about what those tests are and what they hope to accomplish?
I am so happy to do that.
Good.
Biofeedback is a physiological measurement of
your body. So it is going to work with breathing. It's going to work with temperature control, learning how to warm your hands to divert the blood away from your heart and down into your hands. Obviously, we're not diverting all the blood. We want you to have some blood in your heart. But what
yeah.
we are doing is sometimes when people are anxious, they will hold themselves very, very, very tight. Their shoulders
yes.
will go up in the air. Their tongue will go up against the roof of their mouth. And their body is very tense. And so what biofeedback does is it trains someone to take control of their bodies, of their physiology. It might be a galvanic skin response or an oximeter, the amount of oxygen that comes off your fingertips. So we use those different tools to empower you to learn to relax your own body. With neurofeedback, it's a little different. Neurofeedback is measuring cortical activity. And neurofeedback is just an absolutely awesome tool, and especially for those that have had some damage done to their brain, because we don't always have the same abilities that we used to have at trying to take control ourselves. Even though we may want to, we can't always regulate our breathing, and we can't always learn how to warm our hands and so forth. So the neurofeedback is really going to do it for you, but in a different way. Like I said, it measures the cortical activity within the brain, and we look at the frequencies of the electromagnetic information that comes off of the scalp. And from that, what we do is we notice that when someone has a sleep disorder, their brainwave activity shows that within its spectrum. It shows that when they close their eyes, there is no change in cortical activity. Or it might show, you know, too much activity going on in the low, slow frequencies, which would be an indicator of some ADD or brain injury or, you know, some post-traumatic stress syndrome that's going on. It may be that we have too much 23 to 38 hertz, which is all anxiety and ruminating and so forth. And so what we do with our neurofeedback program, and again, we get ours personally from Zengar, and that's ZENGAR.com. And they specialize in creating really, truly the safest, most robust system ever. And I've known many of them. And this one is a fabulous one. So what it will do is it will reduce the amount or the strength of these signals in a way that it shows less turbulence in the brain and less variance. So in other words, your entire brain spectrum is kind of working at the same energy level, which allows you to be able to, you know, flourish. Sometimes I'll look at it as though it's been like an orchestra. You know, when we have 40, you know, violins, 21st and 22nd violins, and they look beautiful, but when you've got three trumpets in the background that's blaring, you can't hear any of the melody of the violins. And we have some frequency levels in our brain that when they've been damaged, they blare. And so we need to really reduce that variance so that you don't have this turbulent brain any longer, and you can really learn, and you can really function. And then when
Lisa,
you go to the counselors.
I'm sorry, uh-huh. I guess I do want to interrupt because I'm doing it. That website,
yeah.
I had started typing it in and I lost you. Was that G-E-N-D-A-R?
It's
give me your...
Z as in zebra.
Okay, hang on. Let me get rid of the Z real quick. That's the part I didn't hear. I was having that one of those issues you talked about earlier. Okay.
Absolutely.
Z-E-N-D-A-R.
No, I'm sorry. G. Z as in zebra. E as in elephant. N as in Nancy. And then G as in giraffe.
Okay.
A as in apple. And R as in reddit.com.
Thank you for doing
and
that
absolutely.
For me.
Absolutely. And he's also put together some podcasts that really help explain a little bit more about that whole process. And anyone that is interested in learning more about how it works, you can go to my website, and I've got a few little short videos. You're welcome to call me. You know, however you'd like to get in touch, just let me know, and I'm happy to spend some time one-on-one talking with you about what it is that you're working with and dealing with.
Now, before I let the other people on, and I'm going to do that in 1 second, but I'm trying to get a head start here. In the program notes, if people came on vis-a-vis computer, they can find this written in the program notes. But for those of you that are just listening out there, Lisa's website, I believe that she's referring to, is it the cognitive-connections?
Yes.
.com, Lisa? Okay, it's, and I'll do a little of what she was doing just to make sure you get it, because I really want you to check out her website, but www.cognitive, cognitiveconnections.com. So cognitive-connections.com, and we've just put that in the we just put that in the chat too, so make sure to check that out. I'm going to have to start bringing you guys on. I could keep her all night, but I'm going to have to quit. I promised her a time, and I got to quit doing that for any of my guests who ever listen to my shows. I promise them, you know, it'll be about an hour, and, you know, 2 hours later, we're still going on. But I'm going to start at the top with the person who's been waiting the longest, and I think this may be the person I've been teasing. Is this our Tuesday host, Les Paul Morgan?
Yes, it is. Wow, what a wonderful guest.
Thank you.
You cover so many different things. I had a bunch of questions. I think my brain has melted down, and I can't ask them. I'm trying. I'm a traumatic brain injury survivor, multiple traumatic brain injury survivor. And Kim and I know each other because we're co-hosts on this on different shows on Brain Injury Radio. But I saw that you're involved in music therapy in some way, and I'm forgetting what it said. I had planned on asking you a question. I was so excited about everything you said, I forgot what I was saying.
Well,
I was going to say, I mean.
Let me share with you that the music therapy that I use is not real traditional. I do a lot with rhythm because I found that rhythm and language go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And so many, many, many times, even someone's verbal, I will go ahead and do rhythm activities with them and with rhythm sticks or with switches, like with the interactive metronome.
Can I say something real quick?
Just
real quick, because you're actually hitting a home run right now, whether you know it or not, because I got to go to the AMTA, the American Music Therapy Association, as a guest of Albie Manis, the director, and you're talking about the parts that I've been trying to explain to people that maybe they might not understand. I spent 4 days in Atlanta when they had the last conference as his guest, as a brain injury survivor, that woke up from a coma to Paul McCartney's music singing yesterday while I was supposedly dying in the hospital.
That
was what I call my musical awakening. And
yeah.
I mean, I couldn't speak when I came out, but I could listen to music. They said I would listen to music and I would just come out of it. And it brought back my speech when they were saying I would never speak again. They said, hey, your son would not be functional ever again, Mrs. Morgan. He needs to be put in some kind of an institution. We don't even expect him to live. And I've had, I think, altogether 8 operations on my brain. And yet you hear how clearly I can talk and function in music. And not knowing what music therapy was then, and my mother, out of desperation and her being a professional singer when she was much younger, buying a karaoke system because she knew I loved Beatles and different groups and things, got me that, and that helped me snap out of it. I mean, I didn't know that, who or where I was until the music started coming into my head and woke me up. And I don't want to take much of your time because I know you've had so many things to cover tonight, but thank you for coming.
Oh, no, I appreciate it.
And I just, could you explain what you were saying about the rhythms and beats and all the different things to people? Because
sure.
I've heard it and understand it, but other people might not.
Yeah. Well, you know, we really, internally, we have a rhythm. Our rhythm helps us fall asleep at night. Our rhythm helps morning. You watch a mom with a newborn baby, the first thing she does is to stand there and sway and move the child to a rhythm and to a beat. And what we found is that most people learn language better if there is a prosody to it, some sort of a rhythm that helps lull them into being able to say the words. The music's fabulous. I mean, it really is fabulous. And it also is, you know, I mean, obviously it works for you, and it's an excellent way of getting people involved with what, you know, with community and with the words that are within the song. And you can create words to go into the melody of a song to help someone out. For me personally, what I found, though, is using the rhythm stick, taking away the rhythm stick finally and using fingers for them to use in a rhythmic way seems to elicit a different type of language pattern. And it really seems to allow them to, you know, to do their talking. And even, like I said, even if they are articulate people, organizing the information in our brain is not so easy. And so when we can organize that information in a rhythmic manner throughout the day, then it allows us to go ahead and remember what we need to do and remember it in an order, and it gives
yeah.
us some organization to how we think.
Exactly. Wow. Well,
you know,
it's been my pleasure to speak to you, and I don't know how much time you have left to speak, but I'm just in awe of your the way you do this, because we meet so many survivors that are struggling on the radio show that really are searching for their voice. They're searching for a place to call home on this planet because so many people feel like they've lost themselves. I work
yeah.
at a center for independent living, and as a peer support and advocacy person that works directly with people with brain injury, and I see people come in the office crying, saying, "I need help for my son. I need some help for my father." Over and over, and what you have sounds like the tools that are needed to truly help people, and that's why I got so excited when I heard everything you were saying.
Thank you so much. I always appreciate that validation as well. I'm glad that it's really touching a place in your heart as well as anyone else's, that this is the right direction, because it certainly has led me down this path.
Yeah.
So. Well, keep up the good work, and thank you so much. We need so many people out there helping others.
Thank you.
I mean, it truly does take a huge village. Just raise me. I can't imagine all these other people.
Okay. That's great. Well, good. I knew Les Paul would want to talk to you about music, so... That's it's interesting, you know, all just in a couple of people, photography, writing, music, all things that,
mm-hmm.
you know, we weren't necessarily doing before and how they impacted our life. I've got one more. Look like a couple people dropped off, so maybe they heard the answer to their question. But area code 202, I think this is one of our new listeners who's had a lot to contribute. Allie, is this you?
It certainly is me. Hello, everyone, and
hello
back to Lisa. How is it going?
Hello, Allie. Nice to meet you.
Thank you so very much. I really appreciate you being on the show. I just received a wealth of information that I have never heard of before, and even having worked with speech-language pathologists and neuropsychologists in the past and what have you, some of these concepts that you've spoken about quite clearly and just going into details, giving examples I've never really heard of, but I live it every day because these are things that I've struggled with most of my life. I'm a multiple brain injury survivor as well. Most of my injuries, each of the six injuries were frontal lobe injuries. And the thing is, you can imagine how that can kind of scramble your eggs a bit and leave you, you know, with a number of very subclinical impairments that the traditional measurement tools or tools of, you know, measurement that are traditionally used within the discipline of neuropsychology just do not pick up. And so it's been deemed that, oh, okay, well, she has ADHD or this is like depression with the dusting of bipolar illness. I mean, they're just all these things that to me are clear misdiagnoses without really zeroing in on the foundational challenge. And by that I mean what's at the root of how these things are, you know, manifesting themselves in her day-to-day life and living. And the question that I have for you is, you know, where are you out of? What state are you in? Do you practice? I'm not sure.
I do. I have a clinic in Indiana, which, there in Indianapolis, and I also have one in California. You know, the neat thing that I have found with my program is that I'm able to do it anywhere. I'm able to walk you through doing this at home. I'm able to help you manifest this program in any location that you are in. So I'm in the process of writing some e-books, and the first one you might be interested in is on the prefrontal cortex. And so it explains what the brain actually, that portion of the brain is doing and how, what happens when there's some problems with it. And then it lists all these different remediation activities and some case studies of things that have been going on. So it's, and we've got seven of those coming out in each of these different areas of the brain that I kind of deemed the Magnificent Seven. So there's lots of ways for you to get involved with what it is that I'm doing, no matter where you live and no matter, you know, how many different people you would like in the household to do the process. So.
And that actually was my next question because I was curious to know, well, how would one proceed forward with, like, a treatment modality? You mentioned several things, and I don't know how one would replicate that type of protocol that you've spoken of without having some type of clinical oversight. And you mentioned that you're going to have this e-learning, format. But would one be able to successfully kind of support themselves in a way that would be on par with perhaps working with someone in a clinical setting?
Yeah, I think that obviously if it is a person that is able to reach all of those subtle concerns that you have. It's someone who, you know, and like I said before in the very beginning of all of this, I think that we kind of have found that people with head injuries fall through the cracks. They don't need to be seeing a medical person on a regular basis to fix these little subtle things. And the neuropsychologists are fabulous in the mental health field, but they're not going to touch on all of these subtle little concerns either. And for most of us, there aren't educators at this age level that are going to be able to do much with us. They don't know much about it. And so, you know, I think that what I have to offer, even in a home program, is more than most people are able to get anywhere else at this point. And that's not to say it's the very best of all best worlds. You know, I would much prefer to see you one-on-one in my office every day. But I've also become very realistic about this and realize that I can only help a handful of people if I keep it in my office. And so what I've tried to do and over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years now, and it will still take another 3 to 5 years, I'm sure, is to document it and put it into a format in a way that you're able to either rent a home neurofeedback system and do this cognitive rehab program or purchase a home neurofeedback system and do a, you know, cognitive rehab program. But what I truly have found is the majority of the people that are really successful at this really embrace both. They embrace the physiological part of the neurofeedback and they embrace the cognitive part of the cognitive rehab program. And so they're two separate modalities, but they both are extremely important for remediation.
Mm-hmm. And what type of specialist, if there was one named, would be able to provide this type of support? Because
you
obviously have
that
a
question?
Yeah, like you have a very like multidisciplinary, I guess, I don't know, I'm not thinking of the word right. This is like an interdisciplinary type approach where it's multimodal and this has been found to be effective and that's been found to be effective, but the training that you have had over the years has equipped you in a very specialized way to support people with these various challenges. In my hometown, if I wanted to perhaps work with someone in office, what type of specialist would that be?
Yeah.
Is there a term to call that?
You know, there, it's a good question. There really are not. There really isn't anybody else like
that. Tough answer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I hate to say that, but, you know, it is a very diverse background, and I kind of went outside the bounds. I did not go traditional routes in any way. So, you know, I've got a little bit of a speech and language therapy background with deaf education. I've also got the psychologist and the mental health. I did all my internship hours with a neurologist for 7 years. So, you know, my background is very diverse, and in all three of those, you know, besides owning and operating the school. And so it's a very different background. And so, I, you know, if you were to get close to what I did, I would probably suggest that you call me.
I can't even think of anybody. I'll get your number. I'm going to check out your website. And the last question, and I appreciate your time. Because I'm currently on SSDI, would you deem it a threat in a sense? While I think healing is a wonderful thing and I wholeheartedly embrace it, one of my concerns would be to, if there is such a thing, rehab myself so well that safety net goes away, because now I've been deemed as functional, you know, and I have eradicated these challenges that caused me to seek help in the first place, especially if I'm propping myself up with all of these different modalities. But if any of them slip away, I'm concerned that there would be some degree of reverting back to a state that would have been closer to maybe like the baseline of where I began, and to the degree that I continue to implement these unconventional strategies to rehab my cognitive health and well-being, then I'm up to par again. But to the degree that I'm not actively doing, it almost feels like this race in a hamster wheel to kind of keep this boulder pushed up the hill, but as soon as I stop moving, it kind of pushes me back down again. And I'm just wondering if persons will tend to heal so well that if they had a medical review, a person would now consider them no longer quote-unquote disabled or impaired enough to even receive disability.
You know, I think one, I can't really speak to the disability statement. What I can speak to is the fear of not being able to be able to get back and into society in a functional way. You know, I think that when we look at cancer victims, I think a lot of them are very fearful to ever give up their oncologist. That was their lifeline. And
right.
I think that as we, you know, we look at head injuries and so forth, and we are healing, it is a step forward, and it's a step that is a very important one. And when you add a program like this one to what you're doing, it's not in place of anything. It is truly an adjunct to. And little by little, as you feel comfortable dropping other things, one of the things that you probably will never drop
is your neurologist or your, you know, maybe your psychiatrist or psychologist. Those are people that have been such an, you know, a huge component in your world and life in the beginning stages, that those may be people that you still will always be with. And there's nothing at all wrong with that, you know?
Yes.
So, you know, but if you stay on SSDI or if you get off of it, I assume that you're getting off of it because you are so much better that you can function. And then that is just major kudos to you. I mean, that's what we all want. And if you don't and you still need to stay on it, then let's make sure that your life is functioning the best that it possibly can be.
You know, another thing about that is that I was commenting in the chat room is, yeah, an ultimate goal, obviously, is, you know, we've been raised in a society where that kind of help is looked down on, and we want to be self-starters, go-getters, and all that. But, you know, we've also attached a lot of our identity into a paycheck and equated that with our usefulness. And mm-hmm. if one of those components go away, we fold like a house of cards. Now, for example, the people that are doing the hosts on the radio, for example, you know, it's a lot of work. We don't mm-hmm. happen to get compensated for it, but a lot of us wouldn't be able to do this, you know. So I think we've got to feel good about that. I was concurring with you.
Different way. Yeah.
Right. They're soul bucks. And I think that soul bucks are as good as, I mean, you got to pay the rent, but beyond that, I think a good point you raise is being happy where you're at. Certainly, it's admirable to work one's way off of assistance, but at the same time, it doesn't devalue you as a human being or make you less than if you're in that situation. But as you said, making the most of it. And you know, I think that's a great point. So, Lisa, I've kept you much longer than I promised, but this is Dr. Lisa DeLong. And again, you can find her at her website, www.cognitive-connections.com. And also, another thing, we didn't have time to get it together, but she spoke about her experience in her family about creativity, and Lisa has a sister, Kathy Morris, who does some wonderful jazz music, and I think in the future that we're going to be able to play some of her music here on the show in our after hours, and it's a genre we don't have, but I've heard her music and it sounds wonderful, and she'd like to support Lisa and Brain Injury Radio and sounded more than amenable. So we'll really look forward to getting a song or two from Kathy, and then I'll remind everybody that that's your sis. And you guys have really been great about being on the show tonight and all of the valuable information that you've passed on, and you're just a fascinating guest. I'll have you back again sometime if you'll come back, but I appreciate everything that you brought with you tonight. And so do you have any final comments you'd like to make?
You know, I do. I'd just like to thank you, Kim, for inviting me. I'd like very much for everyone to feel the power that they have over so much of this disability. They are doing awesome things. Keep up with the arts. Keep up with, you know, keep helping other people, because it's that feeling of, like you said in the beginning of the show, that gratitude, that feeling of being involved in people's lives that gives you passion. And, you know, we want to remember that that passion really drives the attention and drives the learning. So thank you again. I really appreciate it. I would love to be on the show again sometime, and look for that ebook coming out.
Yeah, definitely, definitely will. Well, it's just been wonderful having you, Lisa, and I will turn you loose now, but appreciate everything that you've done. Looking forward to hearing from your sister. And we'll, just for the listeners out there, we will be on for another while. we'll be
put
here
some
for
of her music on. She's a great, and it's party jazz. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
she's a very
yeah.
talented person. And just
she
to give
is.
Her a tiny plug, she also has one that's called the Healing Music CD, and it
yes.
is awesome just to relax by. It is a fabulous CD.
It is. I can't wait. She wrote me, but she told me, I mean, it was not very long before the show, and things have to be brought in
sure.
an MPP, whatever. But anyway, I'm really looking forward to it. And I listened to cuts off that were really good, so that's going to be great. You've got a very talented family. You should be very, very proud of your accomplishments, it sounds like,
well,
both
thank
of
you.
So,
thank you. My parents did a good job.
yeah, they
so.
Did. They did a great job.
Well, thank you so very much. Happy Thanksgiving, and I appreciate the time that you guys have spent with me tonight.
And to you as well. Thanks so much, Lisa. Before she hangs up, and she is muting now, earlier I told her a joke. I told her a song I usually close this portion of my show with, and then for those of you that want to stay for either additional conversation about this topic or where you're at with your brain injury, something that's going on with you, or just listen to the music, and we've got some wonderful music. I told her I was going to close with one song, but one of you said the words just, I don't know, in the last 4 minutes. So I made a joke, and let's see how your memory is out there, Lisa. I said something about, I know I have 4 minutes and 8 seconds. So I'm going to leave her with that little joke. And you guys, I'm going to say, this is Daniel Christian with Find My Voice. And we'll be back in 4 minutes and 8 seconds. And thank you to Lisa.
Question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. My brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice. finally getting used to my own skin. I never knew I would come this far. When you get too good at fitting in, it's hard to tell who you really are. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my voice. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my voice. And now is the time to find my
That was Daniel Christian, folks. It's DanielChristian music.com, DanielChristianMusic.com. Or if you happen to be listening on Facebook tonight, you're already at Facebook, look up Daniel Christian Music and let him know you enjoyed hearing his song here on Kim's Brain Injury Radio Show. And I know they love to hear the feedback, because when I talk to these musicians, they'll mention to me that one of you dropped a note or posted something on their Facebook page, and so they're very grateful for our support and vice versa. So for those of you who came in late, I hope that you'll go back and listen to this show up to this point. Very, very good guest, I thought, very knowledgeable and a nice flow to the interview. So I really appreciate that a lot. And I opened up with making a comment before I brought Lisa on about this being the 11th month and Thanksgiving, and what goes with Thanksgiving is gratitude. And I was thinking about, I made a post, any of you who watch my personal Facebook page, I made a pensive statement. And normally my Facebook page is about telling a story in photographs. I had one of our hosts who never instant messages me do it yesterday and said, it was a really innocent question, why do you post so many pictures? And I wasn't aware that you could post that many. And I said, it's a story. It's a story of my life, my perceptions as I see the environment around me. And so I just choose to communicate in that way a lot of times. And of course, because a lot of you know, I take a lot of photographs. And so in any case, I put something on there last night because I had a hard day yesterday, and a couple of you that are in the chat room know that because we discussed it on Les's show last night. But, you know, it was really cold and windy and rainy, and the beautiful fall flowers, those beautiful leaves you guys are seeing last weekend are gone. They're on the ground. And so, you know, it's not quite as pretty. It's gray. It's cool. The war wounds ache. And I had several things I won't go into again that didn't go the way that I had planned, didn't go the way that I had wanted them. And so I wasn't having a pity party, but I felt like I had crashed. And what I closed with are, my shoulders aren't that broad. But the comment just said that no matter how challenging the day has been, that I always try to find balance in the realization or the knowledge that I also at any given time have a lot of things to be grateful for. And when I'm living in the problem, I'm focusing on my frustrations and my anger and doing replays and not letting go. And when I start to want to crawl out of that valley and find the peak that I know ultimately is going to come, because that's what life is about, a series of peaks and valleys, then I have to consciously or choose to consciously checklist. If I have to write it down for the impact, I'll do that, but at least mentally checklist things that I have to feel grateful about. And so in this middle realizing that we're in the Thanksgiving month, God, I can't believe how quickly this year has seemed to go, I read something on the internet that said recent studies have shown that practicing gratitude leads to a healthier, more fulfilling, others-centered life. People who focus on what they are thankful for versus those who dwell on hassles and frustrations are in a better place than those who don't. They are less likely to get sick and more active, hopeful, and thoughtful of other people. Don't misunderstand. Incorporating gratitude into our lives is not about walking around with a cheesy grin on our face, denying the heartaches or injustices of life. We don't have to sacrifice reality to be grateful. We simply need to adopt a gratitude focus that affects every moment of each day. Like everything else in life that's meaningful, practicing gratefulness takes work. For some who have a habit of focusing on the negative, it may take a lot of effort to change their tune, but everyone is capable of being thankful. And when we live it out, we are showing the world that our awesome higher power is worthy of all our praise and thanks. And I thought that was pretty cool. So I just wanted to read that to you. And one of the things that I struggle with a few of the things, is seasonal affective disorder. And as those leaves were dropping and the temperature was dropping and my body started aching, I wasn't feeling a lot of gratitude. And I was really happy that as a tool of recovery that I've incorporated making a gratitude list, or at least my mind being so used to making that a habit in my life that in times when I ain't feeling real grateful and when I'm not feeling really grateful, I can be grouchier, have more of those sleep disturbances that went on, be more reactionary. Things that wouldn't bother me on one day might be the hill I want to die on that day. And I just thought I would throw out there before we continue whichever direction we're going, that we're early in the month of Thanksgiving, and it's probably a good time for me to continue and maybe one of you check out, making a conscious effort at gratitude about something every day, living in the solution and not getting stuck in the problem. And that's not saying that we don't all have our days, that's for sure, but it's something that helps bring balance. And I know there's a lot of frustration and anger and sadness, you know, places that our mind can go when we're focusing on our own dilemma. But as that article I read mentioned, being others-centered somehow not only benefits the other that you're trying to help out, but it winds up coming back to you. And not only, you know, not always from the place that you think it's going to or expect it's going to, and you might even get angry because it didn't come from that place. And then a couple days later, a gift comes your way, not a literal gift, although I suppose it could be, but a figurative gift, something that brings value to you, to your sense of psyche or well-being. That's the balance. It's not always from the same place, but I think that it happens. But we have to be looking for it. And one way to look for it is by a consistent exercise. And that's one of them that I use. So I hope that'll motivate everybody to not just think about the football game and the dinner that we all eat too much and then either have to wear elastic that day or lay down and undo our top button and make noises for the rest of the day, that gratitude is a tool of recovery. It's an attitude of recovery, and this is a good time to remember it, I think, this month. So what we've covered so far tonight was a great enlightening interview with Lisa DeLong and an announcement that her sister will be contributing, great jazz musician. Got a chance to hear her music, and her name is Kathy Morris. We'll be hearing some of her songs in the future. And also, I talked last night, so I won't overdo it for those of you that were there, but on the street corner downtown in what we call the Old Market area, there was a musician playing just on the street corner with his case open, blowing a saxophone. And I was coming across the street. Of course, I had my camera in my hand. I'm always blitzing everyone with pictures who's anywhere near my Facebook. You guys are seeing them. But I reached my camera up and I clicked a picture. Well, I don't normally click pictures of people. They might get offended by it. You know, maybe they're on the most wanted list or something. But it was kind of funny. For some reason, I put up my camera and he pointed his horn my direction. Well, I wound up stopping to talk to this guy. And he gave me, anyway, we got to talking. I told him what I do when I found out that what he said to me is he ran out of their CDs, looking down in his case. And I thought, huh, well, that's interesting. And so I told him what I did. And I said, have you recorded? You know, obviously you have recorded this music. Is it something that you think that you might be interested in letting me hear to use on the radio program? And I gave the guy my card and I didn't hear anything for a day or two and I kind of blew it off. And then I got a call yesterday that kind of tickled me. It was not from him, but he is a saxophone player in a band, and doggone it, I wish I had the note with me right now what he's called now. You'll hear soon enough. But in any case, the guy who started the band got a hold of me, and we got to visiting, and it was really cool. He was a native of here in Omaha and had a band at like high school age and wound up opening. I don't know about our age demographic listening right now, but some of you might recognize these bands. Todd Young played with Weather Report, Tower of Power, and then they were opening for a lot of acts that were playing here. And one of the acts was George Clinton. And one of his songs was called Atomic Dog, and this was right smack in the middle of the disco era. They were here for a concert, and this man's band opened for them, and they liked them so much they wanted to keep them and take them on tour with them, which they did. He moved away for 10 years and has come back to our area and to take care, actually, of she was an aging parent, but I believe he recently lost her. But they've just put out a new CD, and I'm going to go and listen to them do a rehearsal, as a matter of fact, because they are coincidentally not located that far away from me. And so we're going to have a couple new musicians coming on, and that'll be pretty cool. Also, again, I want to thank Lash Publishing for sponsoring Recovery Now, and Gordon Johnson for sponsoring Brain Injury Radio. Want to remind you, Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and all of these live shows are archived almost immediately after for on-demand listening. So you never have to be alone or isolated in your recovery again. I'm a huge believer in this, not just because I'm a host, but peer-to-peer support. I'm just a huge believer in peer-to-peer support. Somebody who hasn't walked in my moccasins isn't going to have a lot of credibility with me. And they also haven't validated me over the last 17 years. And that's not a pity pot deal either. That's a reality of fact. And, you know, peer-to-peer support groups, they're not for everybody. Different people deal in different ways, but the fact that people can have a choice is huge to me. And now we're going on, 3 hours, almost, you know, 4 to 5 hours a day with a myriad of different hosts with amazing programs. And I just love the way that we're expanding around here from a mustard seed, you know, who was our founder. Craig Cecilia did Brain Injury Radio for a couple of years on his own one night a week and expanded, I guess, over a year ago. I'll have to have him remind me, but how time flies when you're getting such a great education and support and interaction with people who actually understand what you're talking about. That's major awesome. Boy, it is getting chilly. I'm going to have to start, for those of you that remember my whistling tea kettle last year, I think you're going to be hearing that again. I'd have a habit of going in and turning on the tea kettle and then continuing my show, and all of a sudden all of you listening around the world would hear the whistle blow. So you found out pretty early on that that was one of my deficits, is something shiny. I walk away, forget about it, and then you hear the whistle. And the other one is muting my mic. When I hear background music or want to step away, I mute my mic, and then I come back and say some of the most profound things you have ever heard while the mic is muted. And so that really bums me out. But I'll open some other mics, and we'll do some more chatting. I think I'm going to play one more song first. For anybody out there who'd like to call in, the number is 424-243-9540. Again, that's 424-243-9540. Also want to, I guess, before I do that, direct you to two other things. This is a brain injury moment. Last night, we were talking about the TBI Survivor Network, and it's one way to get there is tbisn.com. And somebody mentioned to me, Allie mentioned to me, one of our new frequenters out in the peanut gallery there mentioned to me that she sent me a friend request on there. And I said, what? I don't think that I'm a member of that group. And she said, well, yeah, you are. It was April of 2012, you even posted pictures. And I was like, okay, this was all on air like it is now. But I was laughing because I had no memory of this. And apparently I was really into it when I joined and then forgot. Somehow Facebook was like Pac-Man and suddenly ate me alive, and I didn't remember. And so tonight I want you to know, and I'll take the opportunity to let the rest of the audience know that do check out tbisn.com. It's a very great resource for brain injury support and material. And you get to hear about the Peer 411 support line, our eventually to be 24/7 peer-to-peer support line where one survivor can call in and talk to another. There's information about the medical ID card, also a brainchild of Craig's hard work. And it's a way you can carry a card about the size of a driver's license, and it's like a computer thing. Now he'll maybe smile at my technical prowess, but basically what it boils down to is you go and check it out, but you are able to put some medical information in there so that if you were unconscious or couldn't advocate for yourself, you'd have a card on you that would inform about your potential problems or challenges and some amount of medical records even if you want. So it's a really good site. Craig and Allie, thank you for telling me that I was a member and I had a one-year blackout, I guess, over it. So that's really awesome. And while I embellished on that a long time, I forgot the other thing I was going to say or plug. So in any case, I better go to a song and take a breath and maybe turn on that tea kettle. So what did I play? I got some new, Craig told me, you know, he lives up in the Pacific Coast, and I was whining, talking about gratitude again for a second. It was pouring down rain and windy and freezing, and I was complaining about it when I was talking to him. I can't remember, was that this morning or yesterday morning, but his counter to my complaint is that it was snowing where he is. And that put me in my place, and I shut up and got out my umbrella, but it's still darn chilly out there. So I'm going to play a song from somebody from his neck of the woods, and also a cool picture. My poor husband has to put up with so much out of me. There's the good news and the entertaining news about being married to a brain injury survivor. He's seen me dance in pink elephant costume and actually had to film it. I get matching t-shirts like the I've Got Your Back Stickman t-shirt some of you guys saw posted the other day. Got a new one coming, too. And all the goofy things I have this guy do. But his job, his life might not have been quite so spontaneous and maybe a little flatter had I not come along. Who knows? And then I think he compliments me by being even keeled when, a good person to talk somebody like me down off a cliff. So I have a lot of gratitude for that tonight. So I think you'll catch me sprinkling the rest of the show with things that I'm grateful for. And when I unmute you, maybe you'd like to tell me about some things in your life that you're grateful for in spite of the challenges that you might be facing, or comment on our guest. But I'm going to play Ari Moore. We're talking about different bands. A lot of you out there know, the new ones might not, but Ari Moore, her sister And these were bands, frankly, I hadn't heard of, but a lot of you have, so it just goes to show you. But Ari Moore's sister, Pamela, was in Queensryche for all these years that that existed. A cousin of hers, I believe, headlines in the band Berlin. And she has another relative, I think, that plays guitar in Yes. And so she certainly had a creative, has a creative family, like Lisa seems blessed to be our guest. But I didn't hear those other people. I heard her. Guess it was meant to be. She's a partying kind of enthusiastic girl with, I think, a really sexy voice. But also has a heart of gold, and she's a sweetie. So check her out. It's AuryMoore Band, BAND. So if you guys are on Facebook right now, you would just look up Ari Moore Band, AuryMoore Band. Oh, I'm sorry. There's two O's and more. Scratch AuryMoreBand and give her your gratitude for her music. Or you can check her out at AuryMoreBand.com. And I'm going to play Thin Kind of Mellow, and then I'll come back and open the mics. Green tea, hot green tea later in the evening. Nice tune. Sounds good to me. This is Do Be Gentle.
Go ahead and make my day. Go ahead and come my way. Push me to the limit and inch me beyond. Splash your holy water, sanctify me. Let me see God, I gotta believe. You're all that I wanted. I sit here and wait. Now that I have you, please hear me say, do be gentle with my heart. Do be gentle with your kiss. Forever love me like this. And hey, do be gentle with your kiss. Some others have tried to lead me astray, broken all promises, then ran away. I gave him my heart, want someone to hold, a pretty face, smiled fool's gold. Since then I learned to fear what love can hold. Whatever you do, dear, don't let your love grow cold. And to be gentle with my heart. Do be gentle with your kiss. Forever love me like this. And hey, do be gentle with my kiss. Would you love me gently if you don't? Forever love me this much. And boy, would you be gently if you don't? To be gentle with my heart, yeah. To be gentle with your kiss. For ever love will make you like this, boy. And to be gentle with your kiss.
That was my buddy, Ari Moore. Did I say we got matching hoodies, Ari Moore band? My husband and I decided, I don't know, there's a lot of times I get him something and I decide I need one too. But Ari came out with some hoodies, and it was just before we were coming into fall, and we posted a picture on the Facebook page. I think I did it on Brain Injury Radio, even my personal page and my In a Flash page, but my husband and I in jeans and our Ari Moore hoodie, crackin' wise, pointing at the name on the deal. Wow, I just had a technical thing. But I can remedy that. I see we have another, a new caller, new area code on there. And so I think I'm going to open that mic, see who it is, and then I might play one upbeat song. I brought you down with that one and relaxed you, but I think I'll keep your blood pressure healthily stimulated by switching over to something a little more racy. But let's see who area code 775 is. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, is this me?
Yes, it is.
Hello?
I think it's you.
Hi.
Is it you?
Okay, I didn't, if you could hear me or not. I thought it would be 775. It would have to be me.
Houston, we can hear you.
Okay, cool. Cool. I didn't know. It was kind of weird. I haven't called in before like this. Something new. My name is Matt. I'm a one-year recovering traumatic brain injury survivor. I fell last year in November in a elevator shaft and was pretty injured. Spent some time in the hospital, and I'm just now really comprehending that I had a traumatic brain injury. The workers' comp company and everybody really hasn't pushed that edge of it and really hasn't helped out on that edge of it. And even my neurologist really hasn't. I mean, he's been treating me for epilepsy, what I had beforehand. Hasn't
right.
really helped me out with it. I'm kind of concerned now because I've been using medical marijuana for quite a long time. I'm just afraid that somehow this is going to cause things to be worse. It seems to help me out and keep me out from being in a rehab center or being in locked up, because otherwise I don't think I could live alone. I don't think I could really handle things, because it really does help with the emotional outburst and kind of help smooth things. I don't smoke. I vaporize or I eat brownies. So I don't smoke anything. And I don't drink. But I'm just curious of other people's opinions of just if I'm making things worse or if I'm possibly doing things better. I know I've done some research, and it says a lot of things in France, they're setting cannabinoids that can help actually with mice in the recovery and protection from traumatic brain injuries.
I think that's a good question, not one I'm prepared to talk about on this show. Our Friday night host knows about this. He lives in a state where that's a legal alternative, and I really can't speculate on that particular question. We all have our opinions about it one way or another, but Friday would be a really good show for you to listen to, pardon me, with someone who's got a lot more experience, because he is in a legal state, of dealing with other people that are using that particular treatment. And if somebody is out there using that treatment, well, we don't have enough time left in the show to call in and have the whole new subject. So that's a great subject. And Kevin, our Friday host, has had it on a number of times, and I think you'd enjoy listening to that and get a lot better of a take to your very valid question than I'm prepared to be able to give you. So let's see. I promised that I was going to, let's see, John. These are in alphabetical order. We're getting a pretty full studio around here. But let's see. I'm going to play a song by John Cruise, and I'm not going to go into the story every time, but you folks know that I have an indie musician from my area who happens to have a tumor on his brainstem, and it's inoperable. He just completed 38 rounds of radiation and still singing and doing a good job, but it didn't, the good news is the tumor didn't grow. The other news is that it didn't shrink. So I'm grateful that John Cruise is my friend, and I'm praying that he'll be able to cut that next CD that he has in mind. He's got a very compelling story. He's going to be a guest of mine in the coming weeks as he can. But I'm going to play one of his racier tunes. I usually play some tear-jerking emotional ballads that are just blow me out of this world. But tonight, we're going to play something a little racier. 3 minutes and 46 seconds. We've got 30 minutes left in the show, and I'll start undoing some mics, I promise. Yo, is my mic open? Wait. Okay. I thought you meant literally where did I go, and I was just explaining it. You meant that I blanked out, and I said, God darn it, I hope I would get through one show where I didn't do that. The tea kettle whistle, I didn't want you to bust me with the tea kettle whistle. Let's see, Les Paul, can you hear me now, Les Paul?
Yes, hear you fine.
Okay, good. Hi.
Tim, I just want to say what an amazing show tonight. Wow. I don't know how to put it in words. You had a fantabulous, super fabulistic, expialidocious kind of show tonight. It was amazing. It really was.
Oh, thank you. Well,
that's just
putting it
mildly.
Well, you know, it's all about my guests. You know, I'm blessed to get some good guests, and
can I say something though?
Yeah.
And it's about you too. Don't forget you. You're the one who ran the show. You're the one who got the guest. You're the one who did absolutely amazing. So I'm saying you were both wonderful together.
Thank you. It takes
teamwork.
I felt that way too. I really, you know, you get a rapport with someone, but she's just stimulates my inquisitive mind and has a great way of expressing herself, and so I really had a good time with this interview too. I couldn't believe it when I looked at the clock and we were like at an hour and 40 minutes. I told her, oh, it'll be like an hour.
The time
zooms
by.
I know. That was so super cool. So anyway, thank you very much. I really, 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 really enjoyed her information and so much information. And can you imagine, we talk about this all the time, and she typifies it, and that's that, you know, she started out at a younger age when she was more vulnerable with problems in school, you know, going through all the problems, and then not only working through them but exceeding them. I mean, she's academically, she could wallpaper her bathroom with all of the
wow. I don't even know how to put words to describe how academically superb she was, and all. I've never seen one person have so many different things that tie together in such a beautiful way, that explain things in such a simplistic way that you can understand them as a human being and yet get it, even if you're a survivor. Does that make any sense?
It does. Yeah, absolutely. Really, really amazing. I think that, yeah, I was just really impressed. Well, obviously, that's what attracted to me, her to me in the first place, is just, you know, reading all of that. I thought, geez, you know. And the other part, I was really excited, and her mic, she's not on the mic anymore, but I see she joined us in chat. I'll just make a little joke with her. You know, a lot of people that have a lot of academic pedigree can be kind of dry, you know, because they have spent their nose in a book and not socializing very much. They got really good information, but I think Lisa's got just a really pleasant personality, presentation, you know what I mean?
Yes, I do know that. And, I mean, when you talk about you and I both, you say 17 years, I say 17 and a half between our injuries, you know, that's, what, 34 and a half years between two people?
Exactly.
Without finding the help and care and compassion that we were searching for, that you literally had to go out and start your own radio show to find there were people out there like this that understood and care and want to help people. And that I had, with me, I mean, I just kept trying to go back and trying to go back and trying to go back. And they'd say, no, Mr. Morgan, you can't. It's not possible. Go home. And it felt like they were saying, go home and die to me. And to hear someone so positive and so passionate about it, and hear Allie be so passionate, and all these wonderful people just sharing their stories and giving their heart out in a way that you just don't hear anymore on anything that I know of. You hear, I've met some wonderful doctors. I've met wonderful associations. I've met bad companies and bad people that do not understand people after they've had a disability or a brain injury. And, wow, we just need more people that have that care and compassion that she showed tonight and that everyone on here has showed tonight. I'm just very happy to know you and be your friend and work together on Brain Injury Radio to help the survivors and everyone else out there like us, because I don't feel like I'm anybody special. I'm just a guy who was searching like you were. And I just say thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. I'm going to I'll leave your mic open now. I'm going to unmute Allie in just a minute for any closing type comments, and then I do want to play my outro song and maybe one other if I can. But first, I've been in this stage. I've been going through of being a brat. I'm going to do my 5 second. My 5 second belch.
Somewhere in middle America.
Where's your host? Now, can you just guess where is your host? Those dirty dogs haven't gotten back to me, so I shouldn't be using. I should be a Chiquita in Omaha and go after them instead of these guys, But, oh gosh, darn it, that thing is going off again. I'm going to, Allie, are you there? Allie?
I certainly am. I'm right here. I had the phone on mute.
Okay, that's where I'm going to put mine. Do you have anything you'd like to say? I've got to get the tea kettle.
Sure. I just wanted to say that I, too, enjoyed the show. It was wonderful, and I second everything that Les Paul said. You truly are a phenom, Kim, and bringing on such awesome talent as Dr. Lisa and, you know, others just has really exponentially expanded my knowledge base and my horizons. There's no way that I would be able to just kind of gather this information single-handedly, which is one of the reasons that I'm such a proponent of tapping into brain trust. It shortens the learning curve, and it's just, you know, a lot of us have traveled roads that others have not, and we can help one another and support one another and save and spare one another from having to wander in the wilderness for unnecessary periods of time. And if I can help someone, I'm happy to do it.
Oh, wow. That's so much, so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think she's going to need a little more talking because she's still not back.
Yeah, I think she's...
Oh, no, wait a minute. I've been talking.
Oh, okay. Okay,
oh,
I didn't know.
Okay.
There I went, filling that old coffee cup, teacup, green tea. Everyone, I recommend green tea. It's good for you, like gratitude. What you guys reminded me of, I'm, you know, again, going back to this theme and the second portion of the show, well, the first portion, I started out talking about gratitude and the month. I remind everybody, and my show won't, of course, be until next Wednesday, but Monday is Veterans Day, and so we want to make sure to remember and thank our veterans. If you walk by someone in a uniform and you don't already do that on the street Monday, or you go to a graveyard, maybe put a flag out. They usually have sections like that, or just say a prayer for the vets that have gone before and that are joining our community, unfortunately, in the droves, since TBI is the signature wound from this war, Afghanistan and Iraq. And so I'm going to play one of our favorites, Chris Dukes. And I will remind you guys out there, if you're on the internet, I encourage you to go to YouTube. Just go to YouTube. Run there now. Hurry. And get there. And then when you get to YouTube, search three words, Chris, C-H-R-I-S, space, Dukes, D as in dog, U-K-E-S, space, Heroes, H-E-R-O-E-S. And I'm going to dedicate this to all the people that I am grateful that have impacted my life, but also to the people that you're going to see in the video, if you just YouTubed it, our veterans, in honor of Monday and our gratitude for their service, regardless of our political parties or views. People first there too, folks. This is Chris Dukes and Heroes.
Matter how far
That was Chris Dukes, Heroes, and you can find him at chrisdukesmusic.com. Also on Facebook, if you're on Facebook, you can go to Chris Dukes Band, Chris Dukes Band on Facebook, and let him know what a great song that is. And again, we want to thank our veterans with the approach of Veterans Day. And I'd like to, I've talked a lot about gratitude tonight. I'll leave you with a morsel of gratitude, and then we'll play out the show in the usual way because we just have a few minutes left. But I want to thank everybody in the chat, everybody who participated on the phone lines tonight, and help me help others. We all help each other. Anyway, we know that it's in the we that we grow into the new me and find that confidence and courage that it takes to go out and try to live life on the playing field instead of on the sidelines. And that takes some commitment and some faith and gratitude for everything that is going not so good in our life, being able to recognize that there's many things we can be grateful for and that it's all about attitude. So again, I want to remind you, Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and all of these shows are immediately archived, available on demand. I want to thank my wonderful guest tonight, Dr. Lisa DeLong. If you walked in late at any part of the show, you might want to catch it in the archive. I think tonight was a really good show. Appreciate Allie and Les Paul hanging out until the end, and everybody who supports Brain Injury Radio. Pass the word. It's passing the karma. And I'm going to close in the usual way with something I believe we all have and a piece of gratitude I'll leave you with, and that is a guardian angel. This is the song Guardian Angel by Leah West, L-E-A-H-W-E-S-T. You can find her on Facebook just at Leah West, or her website, leahwest.com. Beautiful song, beautiful audience, beautiful show. Thanks so much for being here tonight, and here's Guardian Angel. Good night.
Little baby up in heaven says to God, do I really have to go? And God replies, yes, it's your time to leave. Won't be there alone. You see, there's someone who's been waiting for you, quietly hoping and praying for your sweet and safe arrival down on earth. Challenges you'll have to face. Rest assured. can go.